a legacy gyroplane is back and updated with a few new twists. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Last week at Oshkosh in the ultralight area, I ran into Jim Fields, who had a gyroplane design called the Honeybee out back in the 1990s. Jim's back with a Generation 2 design of the Honeybee, and I got a chance to talk to him about what's different. Jim, your name has been around gyroplane circles for a while now, but we haven't heard from you in relation to the Honeybee in quite some time. The Honeybees behind us are a Generation 2 design. Take our viewers back and tell them how the Honeybee originated, the first one.
Yeah, I'm probably like most people, most of the viewers that love gyroplanes, is I bought my first Benson information package back in 1982, and I got it in the mail and opened it up and fell in love with Igor Benson's information package and all the little pictures of him flying and all the various ways you could configure them. And, you know, in 1982, it was September, a little while after that, the announcement of our first daughter was coming into existence, and we just said, well, a gyroplane's going to have to hold off for a few years. Well, in 1996, I got my AOL disk in the mail, like many other people, and I put it in my laptop and discovered that there was an internet.
Yeah.
And as I started surfing the internet, Paul, what happened was I went to PRA.org, and I found that they were giving away plans to the original Gyrobee from Dr. Ralph Taggart. So I, like many others, downloaded those, printed out all probably 70, 80 pages, and thought, you know, this is a very nice gyroplane, but it kind of needs to be prettied up. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we started putting it into CAD and started looking at it and found out that the contact email address for the Gyrobee had an EDU address, which ended up with being Michigan State University, and I was smart enough to figure out that R. Taggart and how to get a hold of him. So I called Main Information Switchboard and said, I need to speak with Mr. Taggart. And I found him in the geological department, and made contact. And from there, Paul, what happened was, is we met on a Saturday morning, and we had coffee and donuts in his home in Mason, Michigan. And he started talking to me about the next generation of Gyrobee, which ultimately became the Honeybee, the original Honeybee Gyro.
Now, there's a number of gyroplanes with B in the name. Yeah. What do they share in common?
Well, I think the big thing is that they meet Part 103 criteria. The original one came from Martin Holman, which was the Bumblebee. And it had a smaller horizontal stab, still powered by about a 40-horsepower engine. But again, Martin was true to the light disc loading. And a few years after that, Dr. Taggart came out with what he called the Gyrobee. And his used a number of components that were readily available from Brock Manufacturing, Ken Brock. And a few parts were his, and he sort of had a steering system on the nose gear that was like a go-kart steering method. When Dr. Taggart and I met in Mason, Michigan, and we started talking about the next generation of Gyrobee, we did start talking about versus a go-kart type steering. We went to a regular triple fork for the nose gear. We came back to light fiberglass gear and triangulation for the main gear. We got away from the Brock tail, which was fairly expensive, very nice, but much more than we needed to spend for that component. And we came up with a fiberglass and foam with a Sitka spruce core and hardpoint tail, which was lighter. We had larger area. And we also increased, even at that time, the horizontal stab, which later became one of our trademarks. And we were committed originally to the Kawasaki power plant. It was a 440A. And in spite of our best efforts, we just could not produce enough thrust out of the Kawasaki. And ultimately, we end up going with a 440, which flew it. The first prototype of the 440 was probably one of the best performing ultralights that we had made overall because it was so light. And once we went to the heavier gear and so forth, it did slow down a little bit and didn't climb quite so well, but it was much more durable. So the bee, now when you go from the Honeybee to Generation 2Bee, what we did is we increased the size of the horizontal stab a little bit more. We still kept our traditional nose gear. We still kept our original rudder pedal locations, and as you'll see later in some of the previews, we went to a curved overhead, which gives us a little bit more pilot protection, and there are other options that, depending on your final weight as an ultralight, can be added into that basic G2 frame. But we, I think we believe we're true to the spirit of the stability and safety of the Honeybee.
All right, now since you bring up stability and safety, a lot of people have heard a lot of things about gyroplane stability and how you achieve it, and there are some competing schools of thought. How do you reconcile this design with the thinking on centerline thrust and, you know, horizontal stabilizers?
Well, there are three things that we learned when we built the original Bee. And that was, we needed a light disc loading, lighter being down in the neighborhood of 1.0 to 1.3. Any bee will fly great at that disc loading with light power. We learned that, plus the need for static thrust. A standard 447 with a 60-inch propeller will give us 250 pounds of thrust. When we went out to a 66-inch propeller, we were getting 283 pounds of static thrust. But the last thing we learned was that if you put on a fairly large size horizontal stab, the issues of PIO certainly and PPO virtually go away. And stating some history, if we look at the 300 approximate bees that are out there in the world, either production built by Gyrotech or built from Gyrotech plans, we don't have a single fatality listed with NTSB. Nor do we have any fatalities of or incidences of PIO. So coming to the G2 side of it, what we've done is we've maintained the commitment to a horizontal stab, and a large one at that. But what we've done in terms of the placement of the thrust line and of the horizontal stab is we've followed Dr. Taggart's, that you can look at, I think it's at gyrobee.com. You can see his formula for calculating vertical center of gravity or center line thrust issues. And there's a discussion on there that he had with Dick DeGraw, and then he explains through mathematical equation why the typical Bee is in fact a center line thrust machine. And we've really followed that formula. Another gentleman that's been extremely helpful is Jukka Teramaki out of Finland. He has done an awful lot in the world of gyroplanes to establish formulas outside of the normal general aviation formulas for vertical and horizontal tail volume coefficients. So between Jukka and Dr. Taggart, we really fit right in with their mindset and design philosophy and have established a very stable and safe gyroplane.
We'll be back for more with Jim Fields of AeroWorks International in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
This AeroCast segment is sponsored by ForeFlight, makers of ForeFlight Mobile HD, the elegantly designed iPad and iPhone app for pilots. Learn more about ForeFlight's new touch-based flight planning capability. Build complex flight plans and bend routes around weather in just seconds using only your fingers. With HD NexRad, VFR and IFR charts, terminal procedures, a comprehensive AFD, and now touch planning. Visit us online at www.foreflight.com. ForeFlight. Intelligent apps for pilots.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is general aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamond.com. Diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, and today you're hearing my conversation with Jim Fields of AeroWorks International, who introduced a second generation of the Honeybee gyroplane at Oshkosh last week. Tell us about engine choices here. A lot of people who are used to looking at what's currently on the market would look at a two-place tandem gyroplane and think 90 horsepower is not enough. You've got light disc loading, which helps you, but tell us about this Suzuki power plant.
Yeah, the Suzuki that we're using is a 1.3. It's a BB, which gives us 4 valves per cylinder. It gives us a hemispherical head, which has been very, very successful in the Suzuki line. It burns 3 gallons an hour, and static produces 550 pounds of thrust. And the key to a light gyro, and a light gyro that performs well on lower horsepower, is a light disc loading and an efficient structure. The structure you're going to see weighs 637 pounds empty. And if you look at the power to weight ratios, static thrust, we're very consistent with a 40 horsepower ultralight at a disc loading of 10 to 13. When we put 90 horsepower, static thrust at 550 in a similar disc loading because of the larger disc, we're certainly not out to set speed records, but we do want to be up in the neighborhood of 70 to 80 miles an hour in straight and level cruise. And that'll be pretty consistent from the two place over even to the experimental and the ultralight versions.
Tell us about the One Place power plant. First of all, the One Place shares a lot of commonality in its to the front seat of the two place in terms of the layout and the spacing and what a pilot will see getting out of the trainer.
Sure. You know, one thing we've learned over the last 13 years of sales and engineering on senior levels with new product design is how can we create a modular situation that's expandable. So as you see the nose gear of the two place, you see the nose gear of the single place experimental. The two place is literally built with a stretch for the back seat. So the front seat in the two place and the front seat in the single place, or only seat in the single place, are absolutely identical. They share the same common gear, they share the same common armrests, they share the same common nose gear spring, linkages from the rudder pedals, and it gives us economies of scale that allow us to be competitive both on a financial level as well as operationally in packaging and illustrations for kits and builder instructions. So you will see a large resemblance between the front seat of the two-place and the single-place. The tail from either aircraft are absolutely identical. And what we do on the single-place or the experimental version is we take the same basic plating strategies and we use lighter materials in both round tube as well as some honeycombing on some of the channels. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a ultralight with us here, but the math, SolidWorks is a platform that we use, tells us we're going to have about a 60-pound chassis when it's all said and done, and we start adding purchased goods or purchased components to that aircraft.
What are you using for power on the single-place experimental and then on the ultralight?
Well, we've got, on the experimental, we've got a number of choices. 447s are still available. We love them. I wish that Rotex would make different decisions about deleting those from the line. So you can do a 447 currently, you can do a 503, an MZ201 will work on that aircraft as well as an MZ202. We're having discussions on the experimental side for some four-stroke power plants, even as late as of today, but we haven't made any decisions as far as what those four-stroke options will be. When we go to the ultralight, again, I love a 447 with a 66-inch prop. Our limitations in weight will get us 447, 503, and a MZ201. There is another 50-horsepower four-stroke that we'll be testing in the month of September, more than likely, which produces 260 pounds of thrust and burns a gallon and a half an hour. So we can take the legal 5-gallon tank and we can fly for 3 hours, which is unheard of before on a 5-gallon B. So we've got lots of engine options to choose from. What we really want to do in this process is get to know the customer and their needs, find out their long-term vision and goal for their particular B, keep them out of trouble, as well as help them be good B pilots with their short-term choices.
If someone wants to get a hold of you or see more information,
probably the best way to contact us is www.honeybeeg2.com. There'll be contact information there. That'll get you to our individual email addresses for both Jim as well as John. And the phone numbers are there. And, you know, outside of that, probably email is going to be the best way. But local phone number in Michigan is 269-795-7271. And if we're not at the office, it'll be call forwarding to one of us if we're not at the office.
Well, Jim, it's good to have you back in the game, and we'll look forward to following your progress carefully.
Great. Thank you very much, Paul.
Jim Fields has been my guest. Watch for a companion video soon at aero-tv.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.